everyone. This is our September 9th Indian River County School Board discussion agenda. Again, I'll remind you, discussion sessions are not videotaped, and but we do have, as always, we have an audio recording or minutes for one of our meetings that we have. So we are, I think we're on number four. Is today number four in our district goals? I think it is. So let's get started. Dr. Adams?
Thank you. I renamed them the superintendent goals because I think these are what you're going to be evaluating me on. So I highlighted and I looked at the information that, you know, you gave us last time on each of the goals and some of the wording on, you know, what's kind of our vision if we look academically. And so I'd like to take a look at each one of those to see if you want to rework those. And one of the things that was said that I thought was very powerful is that in all areas our goal is to improve student learning. And I thought that was a nice way to frame these various ones. So in the academic area, it was to establish an environment of high expectations that allows every student to unlock their academic potential and use available resources to accommodate and improve student learning. So wordsmithing is fine. I think it sets the high academics for every student, individualizing and using our resources for improved student learning. You asked me to have an objective or an outcome for each of the areas, the strategies that I put on there last time. So I just like to go over each area with you, and you can ask questions after I go over it. The first one is to engage in non-evaluative classroom observations for the purpose of gathering information on types of classroom delivery models. There is a ratio that we want to be looking at in terms of teachers just standing up and delivering information and students being engaged. And there is work out there that's been done on that. And so the Curriculum and Instruction Department is going to do 100 observations over the year. They have a rubric they're going to use. They've been trained. They're non-evaluative in that the teacher's not, you know, that's not part of their evaluation, because what they're looking for is how are teachers delivering the information. So it's for the purpose of gathering information, coming up with an action plan that will increase student time on task. Student engagement, student time on task will increase scores. So the idea is for these 100 observations to take place, and at the end of the year, with the information they've gathered, they're writing an action plan. Okay.
Yeah. And that works with the Common Core.
Yes.
Well.
Yes. Oh, yes. Everything. That's the framework, you know, that you would use.
And you're still going to be collecting baseline data to see where you're at, and where you need to go in terms of that ratio of teacher-student engagement.
I think they're going to gather their data from the observations. I'm not exactly sure. They have a rubric they're going to use. They're being trained on how to do it, so. We will have baseline information to work from as they write the action plan. Okay, that would be. With regard to the annual measurable objectives, the strategy is to increase with the outcome of meeting the target. Okay, so you meet the target or you decrease your level ones and twos in each of these areas by at least 10%. Okay, so you know how we've always looked at level three and above. We're taking that different approach to say, if you don't, your goal would be to meet the target, but if you don't meet that target, then you should have at least reduced your number of level ones and twos by 10%. Okay, and it's in each of the areas.
This is an important one, so we need some discussion on this. Yes, Ms. Disney.
I'm wondering, has there been any alignment or coordination of what is average? I know with FCAT, you know, they looked at three being proficient, but I never really knew if there was any kind of crosswalk to what it would be an average. What the average student would know. Would 3 be what we would consider the average? Because I don't think proficiency necessarily means average.
No. not to define average. It's pretty defined for us in terms of what proficiency means. When we look at it, when we looked at that 1 to 5, the idea was to say, well, 3 is it? 3 is, you know, the middle. And what our compelling data shows is that we've got, in some instances, more from the middle down than we do from the middle up. So our focus needs to be trying to reduce these numbers, but the average only in terms of that being middle.
I'll let you
continue. Oh, well, I remember hearing a teacher say one time in the classroom that to a student, the student said, I can't answer all the questions, they're hard, they're too hard, I don't know this. And then and the teacher said, well, they have to make some of them harder than what you would know, because that's how we can find the range of what our students know. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, we have to meet certain goals that the state sets for us with the different assessment tests. If we had a way of knowing for ourselves what we thought was the average grade for our student, then it might help us look at it a little differently. I remember hearing, were you with me when we heard half of all doctors graduated below?
Right.
So, you know, it makes me wonder if there is a third way of looking at it that we can better explain to parents, because I know parents do not have their head around what proficiency is.
Right. One of the ways that we are looking at it a little differently, but it still doesn't get to what you're talking about, and I don't know how to explain average to a parent today, because you either have to meet these benchmarks or, you know, is we're using another assessment, if you will, to help determine where our kindergarten through third graders are, and it's the SAT-10. We've determined that the 45th percentile in the SAT-10 is sufficient for our students to move on from second to third grade. FCAT says in order to be proficient, you have to be a level 3. SAT-10 says if you're at the 45th percentile, you've got that common, you've got that ground between level 2 and level 3, but the student, you know, is not retained.
Yeah.
So we do have another piece that we're looking at, and we're using the 45th percentile on the SAT-10. So it's another measuring stick, if you will. The problem with proficiency and FCAT is it changes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You have a bar that keeps, you know, you measure it differently every year. So that's why we feel like another assessment like the SAT-10, where we can say it's the 45th percentile. For K to 3 now, we're not using that for any others. And part of it is because of the teacher evaluation. But we're trying to look at a couple different measures. But I don't know how to define average.
So you're talking about in K through 3, because of all the changes that have happened with the assessment, you're looking for another kind of evidence-based tool that would indicate, would give you a baseline for these kids, or it would say to you, you know, in this grade level, a certain percentile on the SAT-10 means that they're ready to go to the next grade level.
It's a couple of reasons that you're doing it. That would be one, okay? Another reason is that we have no measure. This is a norm reference test. We have no measures in K to 3 that are a growth model. You know, one of the things that we have to do in the teacher evaluation is from year to year is to show student growth. The SAT-10 also provides a valid, reliable assessment that would help us with measuring student growth.
Okay, and so that's for K through 3.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your norm reference growth model assessment beyond third
grade?
We
use FCAT and of course, exams for the other.
Okay, and then we know that FCAT is a changing target, so it's not really valid in a lot of respects. So we're using that as a baseline regardless, because I'm trying to understand when you're saying we want to have, if we're looking at these increases for your different objectives in reading and math, okay, what is the baseline you're going to use? You're going to compare those kids to how they did those groups to how they did this year, how the existing third grade class did this year, that's the basis of comparison for a totally different third grade class next year?
The AMO is school-wide.
Right.
Okay. It's your how your African American students, how your all of those different groups. Those are your AMO targets. Okay. And in each of those groups, it's measured by the number of students that score proficiently. Okay.
Right.
So if 50% of your white students were proficient, and next year your goal that has been set for you is 53%, okay, for that one group. What we're suggesting is you, if you meet it, that's fine, okay? Some people have 10 percentage points to go, some have 2, okay? If you don't meet it, then we feel you should have at least reduced your number of level 1s and level 2s by 10%. That's our goal.
I understand that. What I'm trying to understand, my question is a little different. So if that 50% this year of white students, that was their...
And each school has a different AMO.
And this is district-wide, right?
And this is district-wide.
But you're, when you look at this, you're looking at it by school. That's the way you're going to present it to us as an artifact, by school and by district. What I'm trying to get at is you're doing... This group of white students this year, 50%. The next year, in that grade level, you want that group of white students to be 53%, but the white students are two different sets of students.
It's not done by grade level. It's done by school. It's done by district. You know what I mean? So when you get your report,
right,
you're not looking at third grade. You're looking at three through five.
Okay, so, but you're still looking at a different group of students. It's not that you're not comparing, this is how this student did individually, this is how this student did this year, this is this student's learning growth, we met the goal or not. You're saying this is this student's growth this year, and they happen to belong to this subgroup, and then the next year we look at whatever kids are in that subgroup, so you're not really seeing that there's no direct correlation there in growth. I'm just trying to understand how, when you're looking at different groups of students, what is the validity if it's what group A did this year? And I know, like, when you're a teacher, one year you get a group of strong students and those students may do really well. Another year you may have kids that have a lot of issues and you don't do as well. And is it a fair comparison that this group was able to attain 55%, but this group may not? It's a totally different, you're not comparing the same group of kids. So I guess you must have statistical ways of compensating for that.
This is a state measure. This is not a Fran Adams deciding how to do this. Your state is going to tell us, based on annual measurable objectives, whether we met our target. Our goal for Indian River County is to try and meet that target.
Okay.
You know, we can get into all of these other, I mean, really, you know, points that you're making, but as the state is going to look at us, so what I would like to do is to have that trend line begin to take a different direction, and that will only happen if what the students that we have at this particular time, if we work, you know, to try and change that trend line, and this is one way of trying to change that. The state reports it to us by ethnicity, by students with disabilities, by, you know, all of those different measures.
Okay, you just get this from the state, and that's it. That you get a list of your 2014 annual measurable objectives from the state for each subgroup.
That's what we showed you.
And then all you do is do your best to get them to what the state wants you to accomplish. In a nutshell, to put it very simply.
In a nutshell, if we're going to raise our status within the state of Florida, we're going to have to have more students at each ethnicity score at higher levels. And that's our goal, to improve student achievement.
So what I understand is, up to third grade, we've got this at 10 to help us see what.
Right.
for the parents, they can see if their child's performing, you know, better than other students or not as well as other students. And then as they get older, their individual proficiency is being measured by a number of ways, by their end of course exam or their MCAT or their graduation rates,
ACT,
their,
SAT.
All those other measures that we use. So we can take all of that together and see how the district's doing.
Right.
But we also do have measures to see how individual students are doing. In another way, it's just not going to be this way.
Right.
Okay. All right.
I mean, we have our own assessments. We have teacher assessments. So, I mean, there are lots of different ways that students get feedback on how they're doing. But if we're going to measure ourselves against the state, this is the criteria that the state uses to determine how we're doing in these areas.
Okay, and then just a practical question about the 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Is that 10% of the amount we have to make up, which is the half? Let's say we're at 60%. That means 40% or not, so then the state would require us to do 20%. You move up 20%.
Right.
You're saying 10% of the total or 10% of the gradient?
I'm saying 10% of the total.
Okay.
I do have a question. You're talking about your schools of innovation and you're going to have an implementation plan. You know, I'm still curious as to what the plan is for the kids that are in schools this year and now. What are we going to be doing differently until we come up with this plan for our lowest performing schools? What is going to be done differently?
Well, I think that what is being done differently is we're providing staff development, you know, with the building capacity. You know what I mean? I think it's everything that we're doing, you know, in progress, it's kind of working, you know, right now. There was no new initiative in the summer except the careful, working with the cohort and trying to build that capacity at the school level. I think those are probably the key factors in terms of changing what happens in the classroom. And then this is specifically to look at those three schools, and they're doing some planning now. Most likely we'll come out with some type of a theme or a focus, you know, and it may be before the end of the school year in terms of what they decide.
Because I guess what I'm looking at is when you're talking about academic achievement, for example, from all the conversations we've had and from a lot of the stuff that you hear about, if these students are behind, they need more time to catch up. But our time has stayed the same. What we're doing in terms of time year to year pretty much has stayed the same. So when we're looking at academic achievement, I ask myself, what can we be doing to provide that additional time to students so that they can learn within what we're currently offering? And I think about our after-school programs. What kind of accountability is there in our after-school programs to ensure that students are getting the support that they need in terms of homework and reading and language development that we know they're not getting at home? And we know realistically that within the limited confines of the school day, they are not getting, because that is something that is within our control. And we can add rigor to those after-school programs so that the students that are struggling and going to those programs can get the help they need. And that would require staffing with individuals that are capable of helping students. Because I know some kids go to different centers and they really don't get the help they need in terms of their academics. And the kids that are going to these centers, they really would benefit from some additional support. And, that to me seems like that's something within the district confines, because we offer after-school programs, and it's a question of revisiting how we provide those services. Because I know years ago,
it was basically just warehousing kids, and it's really a wasted opportunity. And I know that that has changed. We have the Century 21 grants and so on and so forth, but how effective are they? Because I think I shared with you an article about evidence-based programs and even the 21st century grants. When people have looked at the effectiveness, they're not as effective
if that's a goal the board would like to set, I'm fine with that. What I would encourage you to do is Title I has after-school programs every day, and they're always looking at that. So I would be glad to have Karen Mallett provide some information on some things that they're doing to try and get to those students. That does provide extra time. Title I summer programs extends the school year for them. We work directly with Boys and Girls Club on some reading interventions. Different Youth Activity Center through the Learning Alliance has a summer program with great books and some others. So I think there are a lot of things going on out in the community. But if there is something specific that the board feels that, needs to be part of the goals,
I don't know, board members. I just brought it up because...
To me, the goal is increase student achievement.
I agree.
How you do that is a you problem.
Okay.
I mean, to me, I think it's a good point, a good suggestion. I'm sure you're aware of it, but that's not a goal to me. Okay. That's not a goal. That's an implementation issue, which will be at your level.
Just
I would think. I've been wrong before, though.
Yeah. I mean, we have so many different things going on after school. It isn't just it's a very small group percentage of our students in our after school program, and it's still a third party provider, right?
Not necessarily now.
Okay.
In some cases it could be, but we don't have to do the...
But I think there's larger numbers of students going to the other groups, like Boys and Girls Club and all that, than there are total numbers of students.
Yeah.
Actually,
we have a lot of students that go to Boys and Girls Club. We have a lot of students that stay after school.
Yeah.
One of the things that we've done this year... as a combination, and it's not necessarily always focused on the academics, but it's focused on health issues. Marty Fish has combined with the after-school program to try and mesh, some of the things that we're doing. Title I is specifically...
That's us.
Academic. There are lots of programs going on. I think the one thing that you really have to do with these programs is try and focus and get the students that need to be there. Sometimes you have lots of after-school programs, but in terms of academics, the challenge sometimes is getting a hold of and making sure the children that need that support are the students that are attending these programs.
But when we say after school, there's extended day.
There's extended
one,
day.
There's Marty Fish. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways that's mm-hmm. being provided.
So we don't want to add that as an additional goal. And if you could get, and I don't need another report.
Okay.
But if you would perhaps,
Ms. Jimenez
could have a conversation.
We skipped over the moonshot goal.
The moonshot goal is using the SAT-10, using the 45th percentile, and it's using that time that we have and dividing that in increments to see where would we have to be in 2018 at the 90%. So that's basically how we figure it's going to have to happen.
So you just went backwards?
Yes.
Starting with
yes.
Do we have a general statement that we can use right now about how much better students are doing since we started?
When we look at the moonshot, the focus is on primary. This past year is the third year we would have had any students who would have had the foundations and that additional support.
Uh-huh.
And it was only three schools. It was Liberty, Highlands, Liberty, Glendale, and Dodgertown. And so we didn't have data. When they first started, there was no keeping the records of the data. So we have few students that have been impacted in terms of measuring on FCAT so
far.
What
about DIBELS?
We did use DIBELS. Okay, we used DIBELS the year before, and we used DIBELS this year. We did get some DIBELS information that shows progress, and for some students, and there were a couple schools that just didn't do well at all. So they were working over the summer with the reading coaches and the Learning Alliance to come up with some strategies for those schools. Yeah. And one of two things have happened. One is, I don't know, they have a, Tabby Johnson is being paid by the Learning Alliance, but is working with the K-2 foundations. She actually works for them. They pay for her salary. The reason they hired her is because Marcia is not well, and so they had to fill that gap. And then the second thing is in Title I, we have a K-2 person that's going to be working, not with just foundations, but working with the primary. If the focus is to get students reading on grade level, it's not just about foundations, it's about a balanced reading program. And so Title I now has a K-2 person that is going to work with the primary teachers in those schools where that has the greatest number of risk students. So we have some additional support for that. So we're hoping this year, this coming year, we'll see some of the benefits of that.
Can you remind, you said Liberty Highlands, and what's the other school that
it's Liberty Dodgertown and Glendale.
Oh, Liberty Dodgertown and Glendale. And I know that this is only your plan for 2013-2014, mm-hmm. but what is the big picture in terms of moving forward towards that goal, reaching that goal, and having the students, having the system set up so that they can maintain that? Because I think that's one of those challenges when you look at the studies of Head Start. A lot of people want to blame Head Start if students that were in Head Start a few years down the line are not as proficient as they can be. Mm-hmm. And they can leave Head Start prepared, but if they enter into classrooms thereafter where they're not, where the learning isn't maintained and enhanced, it's very difficult, and that's what happens. They blame the program. They're saying Head Start doesn't work, but it's what happens. The kids come ready to learn. They come with the goals, mm-hmm. and then they start tapering off. So for the big picture, I know this is not for next year, what are we looking at? Because that's a really important part of the success of the Moonshot goal. You get them to third grade, but is everything set up so that from there on, because when you look at our data for students, in high school, in elementary school, they're here. In middle school, they're here. And in high school, they're here. And that tends to be the trend. So what are we doing to say, you know, we're preparing them and we're going to go this way instead of this way? And that's like, I know that's not for next year, but I think it's important to know kind of where we're heading.
Yeah. First of all, I'd like to go back to Head Start. I've always heard that Head Start is a positive thing. I've never heard, and it is, it's never been fully funded, but it's always been a positive influence for children coming in. There's very good longitudinal data on that. In terms of blaming, I think it's a good thing. Any pre-K experiences. I think a couple of things that are happening right now. Right now, and I just came from a meeting before I came here. We're looking at the reading coach position itself to look at how it's being used. And over the years, have we fragmented it to where we're not getting that literacy coaching piece, you know? So they're re-looking at that position. We're actually changing the name of it tonight without changing the drug description to literacy coach, because it's more comprehensive than just reading. It is about reading and writing, you know, when you talk about literacy. So the job description doesn't change, but I just came from a conversation about looking at that position and make sure that we're focusing on those areas that are going to do what you're saying. The second thing that we're doing is we've added some coaches at the secondary level now to support reading across the content areas that will be actually measured through the Common Core, those anchor standards, you know, and the reading is one of those. And so trying to embed that is something that that they're going to focus on. And then I think the other thing, if we do get more Common Core standards embedded in all subject areas, I think you're going to see reading increase at all levels. But right now, there certainly is a gap. As you go from middle school, it flattens out, and high school, the gap just gets wider. And one of the other things, just to commit to reviewing our process, you know, we're establishing these goals, and sometimes you get busy throughout the year, and your meetings, you're dealing with meetings at an executive level where you're dealing with things, you know, there are just so many things out there that you're dealing with, but what we've decided as an executive team is we want to have one of our monthly meetings focus on nothing but goals. What's the progress that we're making in these different areas? So you're kind of looking down on those bigger pictures and not waiting until the end of the year to try and bring it all together. So I think that's a positive thing as well. And we committed to that. So anything else on academic?
Any areas that you feel where something has been omitted that we have previously discussed in any of our other meetings?
I don't know if we need to fit it into this goal necessarily, but one of the questions I have is when it comes to legislation, the Florida legislature is so very active in getting involved in education, and we've seen cases where they've actually put barriers up for us. And I appreciate working with Mr. Morrison. But Ms. Morrison's a numbers man, and a lot of the legislation is through funding, and he's a very important part of it. I'm wondering if you can identify a person that is curriculum-based that I can have that person to talk to about different pieces of legislation that are impacting student learning.
I will do that, and I would also, that has been an important piece that the community literacy leaders have been looking at. You know, not just the learning lines, but the more they discuss that, you know, what's going on in the state of Florida, the more they feel like we need to have some legislative. So what I would also like to do, and I think you put your name out there as somebody, so I would like to get somebody from that literacy, community literacy group to form a smaller group that you could be a part of, if that's okay.
Any time frame on that particular issue on drives? Any time frame you think that may?
Well, I think the group has been committed to sitting and working together and try and hammer out something that they could send to our legislators. You know, I don't know whether it's reasonable to do something this year or not.
It absolutely is. There are committee meetings right now. This is the perfect time to have that discussion.
So that might not come under academic, that might come under community, involvement.
Okay, let's bring that up again as we get to that area.
Okay. Okay, under human resource and management, improve student learning with a high-quality workforce, utilizing both support structures and accountability systems for new and current employees. Under human capital, under human development, under human management, some of the things that are impacting us is the technology. And, you know, there's a lot of things being done in the background with this, the tax referendum money that we got. There's so much infrastructure being put in place. But to the end user, there's a need to provide some staff development. And one of the things that we're doing is coming out with a new responsible use policy. We used to call it an acceptable use policy, and now we're reframing this to a responsible use policy, and we're going to be using that with students and staff, and this will give them more access to some of the tools that we have, but then there's that responsibility piece goes along with it, so they're going to provide some a policy that we'll be bringing forward to you. We also want to provide staff development. And I don't know whether we want to put twice per year, because that was for PM2, but we want to provide staff development in those areas that impact staff, like PM2, eAssembler, FAS Observer. Those are pieces that go along with teacher evaluation and use of data. So I would say professional development for staff twice a year. We had really committed to that on PM2. The other, I don't know for sure.
I think I'd rather see it say ongoing. Because
ongoing, okay.
When it's needed,
yeah.
It's needed. Yeah.
So provide ongoing. Increase the number of models for using non-state approved assessments for the teacher evaluation system. You know, there's FCAT that measures writing, reading, science, and, you know, in those 3 through 9, 3 through 10. Then we have end-of-course exams that aren't evaluation that are used. We have the SAT-10. But there is art and music and career and technical. There are many, many other courses that we don't have a model or an assessment yet for. So districts are really struggling with this. Districts our size, because we don't have the capacity to write 300 tests, valid, reliable tests. So the state over the last several years has been working on item banks, but that's still not available to us and won't be available until spring. In addition to that, you have to have some type of a model that you're going to use. Are you going to use cut scores? You know, there's different models to use once you have an assessment system. So this year we really need to work on looking at models, and part of this is going to be negotiated. You know, it's intertwined. You work on some information, and then pieces and parts of that may have to be negotiated. But we really need to look at the models that we use for these non-state approved assessments, and then increase the number of assessments that we have going to have available. And this is all for the teacher evaluation and trying to measure student growth. Okay, it's all tied into the teacher evaluation. So we want to work on some models, and then we want to come up with some assessments. I think Mr. Reinberg is going to be working, trying to start pulling groups of teachers together to help with some of these hard-to-measure assessments. So there's a lot of work to be done in that area this year. So we want to increase the number of models that we have available, and we want to also increase the number of non-state assessments that we're going to be using.
If they're non-state assessments, does the state still have to do an approval of what we're using is to those?
Yes.
Okay.
They're pretty much approving ones that you come up with there because they understand the enormity of it, but you do have to send a plan in on what you're going to be doing.
What's the difference between a model and an assessment?
The assessment is the exam itself. The model is how are we going to use all the information that we have regarding these assessments, okay? So for FCAT, they use the VAM, okay? For SAT-10, there's a different model. You would look at a cut score or a percentile. But each one, there are different models out there you can use, and that's one of the reasons that you'll see on tonight's board meeting we have a performance data analyst. That is like a statistician that's going to help us begin to do some of our own models. That's what that's about.
It seems like the organizations of different groups of teachers, the Music Teachers mm-hmm. Association, the math teachers, would be able to help to come up with not only the model but the items as well. Has that been tapped into?
Yes, it's been tapped into across the state. Okay, and lots of teachers and some of our teachers have had the opportunity to be involved in that. I think that one of the things that would help is if our teachers had the opportunity to look at some of these items and pull from what makes sense to them with regard to the curriculum, you know, that they're teaching. So they have done that at the state level. Okay, it's just trying to get access to some of that, but bring some of our own together to look at those.
And then you have the buy-in.
Right.
It's coming from the
Here's the hard thing. The fourth grade teacher is being measured by FCAT in reading, math, science. Okay? They're going to get their performance pay based on 50% student growth, 50% observation. The band teacher is going to have their own assessment that you're going to have pre and post information on. So there's that, what some feel is like an inequity in terms of the kind of assessment that you're going to be measuring student growth on, the band and reading, you know. So,
but the other side of that argument is that they all get treated the same based on a school score, which many teachers don't like that either. So.
Well, but that will go away, because right now that's what we've negotiated is a school score based on them. But once you get your own, that's because we're using FCAT. Once we get away from everybody using FCAT, then it'll look different. And you must have an assessment for every subject that's taught. So,
since we're talking, you started talking a little bit about things as they relate to teachers. Mm-hmm. I know that this is not here, and I'm assuming, you know, this is an ongoing thing when it comes to providing adequate professional development for teachers. We're approving the schedule, you know, today's agenda. But I'm curious, you know, we hear sometimes that there are some gaps in the delivery, the quality of the professional development, and that's been ongoing, you know, for a few years. So even though it's not addressed here, is that just, you know, I thought that if we are setting goals, those areas where we have gaps would be included in our goals just for the sake of having that follow-up. From your perception, is that just basically misinformation that we're hearing and things are pretty set up, or do we need to do any work there? Because I know a lot of work is being done.
Right. There is a lot of work being done, and I think there are legitimate issues, but I think it's pretty hard to have professional development that's satisfying to you as a math teacher, and you as the PE teacher, and you as the band teacher, and you as the student support specialist. So you always...
He's the drama teacher.
Oh, he's the...
Cafeteria model. Yeah.
So, you know, trying to come up with common core that is going to satisfy what you think you need, that's difficult to do, okay? And it's legitimate in terms of people don't always feel that you're necessarily meeting their needs. I think one of the things they do take seriously is the feedback that they get, and they get feedback from everyone they do. And actually, one of the things that IRCEA has done this year, which I think is great, is they sent some of their own out to get some training, and they're providing some of their own training on for teachers, you know, on different areas that they think are important. So I think that's great. We're providing a place for them to have it, and so I view that as a good thing, you know. So I think we're willing to support groups like IRCEA, if they have some training they want to offer that they think is more relevant. The master and service plan tonight is not a professional development plan. It's all of the things that workshops fall under. So it's a plan. I just want to be sure that we understand that this is just, regardless of the workshop that you offer, it has to fall underneath one of those to get in service points. But I have, in all my years, I have never heard total satisfaction on professional development. It's out there every single year. And it's a difficult thing to do to satisfy the needs of everybody. But you do it with feedback, and you do it with getting input from teachers.
I have a question.
Yes.
About... the second one, increase the number of models for using non-state. Are we just going to use a raw number for artifacts, or are you going to have stages, like maybe, you know, developing or in progress? Because
at the end, you mean?
Well, it's if the goal is for you to increase the number of non-state assessments used for measuring student growth, you might, where you're starting right now is that you have assessments at all different stages of development. So I'm trying to figure out if we use a raw number.
We will. We're basically starting was from zero on the non-approved state. So we've got lots of assessments out there, but in terms of pulling together those hard to measure, you know, I mean, we've got sat time, we've got lots of measurements, but in terms of trying to come up with those hard to measure, which that's what this is about.
So we'll start with zero.
We'll start with zero.
At the end of the year and whatever.
Okay, the next one has to do with retooling, retraining, organizational changes, and some of the things that you've heard, some of the outcomes will be across the organization is reorganization of the physical plant, and that's, I do think, is going to be better serve our schools. I think it is customer service related, and it you heard about that, so I think that's an outcome of retooling and retraining. They are going to do an online survey to determine customer satisfaction at the end of the year. And IT is going through a retrain and a retool. I mean, we're basically going out of one era of how we look at programming and going into a totally new time. And so that retooling has started last year and will continue this year. And I feel like by the end of this year, we're going to have a team back there that I think is going to be ready to is moving ahead a lot now. But we're still in the process of retraining people. You know, we're going out of like COBOL to SQL database. You know what I mean? So there's just that retraining and very different.
This online survey to determine customer satisfaction, is it just relative to the changes in the way the physical plant department is interacting with schools?
For that one, yeah.
It's not the community.
I think there was going to be a separate one for that, yeah.
And there should be.
Yeah, I hope it's in there because we talked about that, and we've talked about it at the exec team, too. All right, and then in terms of increasing the efficiency of risk management, there have been some specific goals. We want to decrease the percentage of unemployment claims. We feel like there are people that are receiving unemployment benefits that maybe shouldn't be, so we're going to be paying closer attention to that. A decrease in the workman comp rate, and we want to commit to that the insurance premium will remain below the state premium, the average premium change.
Have we gotten any statistics as to why other governmental agencies in Indian River County, through regards to Blue Shield, are actually paying lower rates than premiums?
Well, what we found out...
We were going to do a follow-up because there was a discussion of... When we had this discussion, but we were told that there was maybe a follow-up because I don't know if it was the county or the city.
Well, we did receive information that the county was providing the employees, you know, had better rates.
Right.
What we found out is that they were paying $200 more per employee, and that's why. So the county pays over $600 per employee for their insurance. So that's why. We were not comparing apples to apples. I know.
Oh, my goodness. Good heavens. Yeah. Mr. McCain, you missed a valuable piece of information.
What's up?
You need to hear this one. We had talked about the fact that we had one of our other meetings, there was going to be a follow-up on the fact we've heard that
you've already lost.
County employees, it was our understanding county employees were paying less for their insurance than what our employees were, and there was supposed to be a follow-up. So
okay,
county was supposed to do a
and
follow-up.
Actually, CWA is the one that brought that forward.
Yes.
So they did follow up, and what we found is that the county pays out about over $600 per employee for benefits.
Compared to what?
Between $600 and $700. And yeah, we pay $400.
Interesting.
Is that it? Can I go back out now?
No. You want
to. All right, and we want to improve the staff selection process. We are going to implement a new tracking system in the middle of the year. We want to improve our recruitment strategies by reaching out to colleges and universities, attending career fairs, using methods beyond the website, you know, as far as advertising. And although I believe they've done some exit interviews, I don't believe we've used the information, so we want to be more formal about the exit interviews and getting feedback to be used for the organization. We would also like to increase the teacher substitute fill rate from 94% to 98%. Employee evaluations, you know, come out of human resource, so we want to a review to see what kind of fidelity we have to the evaluation system, whether it's for administrators, whether it's for teacher evaluations. We are going to require everybody to adhere to the guidelines and the timelines that we have, and new administrative and classified evaluation systems will be implemented. You know how we've meaning district office and classified. Teachers and administrators, school administrators have undergone a new evaluation system, so we're in the process of trying to get something implemented for the other groups.
What kind of artifact are you thinking about in your improved staff selection process, the feedback that you get from the exit interviews?
I think that probably we can provide a report, you know, on our findings.
Okay.
The teacher substitute fill rate, is that a function of a pool, not having a large enough pool or a rich enough pool? Or is it a function of the system we're using that,
I think that's a combination. I think that we would always benefit from having a few more, but a lot of it's planning. A lot of it is, planning ahead. I mean, in terms of, I'm talking about whether it's a district or the school, and just trying to plan ahead. And I don't think it was numbers last year.
Is it largely impacted by just a couple of different days of the year, like right before a holiday or something? I mean, what I'm getting at, is there perhaps a policy that we could put in place that might help if it's just a couple of specific days that are causing the numbers to be that low?
We actually talked about that. You know, remember, we talked about that as a group, and I think that there are days that are impacted, but there are days, and we decided not to do it because that would have to be negotiated. But I will say that the days before holidays and Fridays and Mondays are our highest absentee rates for teachers, and then it follows suit with students, you know, which comes first, you know. But it is common that any change to that, as far as before a holiday, I think we have to be negotiating.
Well, I don't think we would need to negotiate, but I believe that we also requested information on the, I think we have two this year, we have a teacher work day on a Friday, no school for students, and then the Monday is a holiday. And I'm sorry, I don't have, I've looked to see if I have my calendar, and I don't. Mm-hmm. But we had requested that Friday that is supposed to be a teacher work day, mm-hmm. the number of absentees for those days as we move forward. Only because I work with some things with Orange County and Osceola County now in my life, and as well as Indian River County, I'm seeing some interesting differences in some of the things that we are accepting as best practice. And if there's not a problem, then we need to know there's not a problem. But if there is a problem, then when we sit and give direction to the calendar committee, that needs to be a very lively discussion with the calendar committee. And if it is a duck, we need to label it as such.
Okay.
in my opinion.
Okay, school culture and climate, to develop and sustain a learning environment for students and staff that is safe, respectful, and engaging to improve student learning. One of our big initiatives this year is the Indian River Fellowship of Instructional Leaders. That is a year-long process, and completing that and having everybody there consistently there will be a big accomplishment. And to develop that student self-efficacy, which I think will be an outcome of this. And this year we're going to focus on attendance, and we will have increased attendance rate. Survey school administrators and teachers annually regarding the use and effective of locally created benchmark assessments with modifications based on survey results. And we actually have started that this year, and we will continue it. And we actually have already started to make some modification based on feedback that we're getting. But we feel like this is something that needs to be done every year. And so my guess is at the end of the year we'll do it as well. Survey school administrators and teachers annually regarding technology use and needs. That does help us set what the professional development needs are and with regard to technology. And I don't know whether you've seen it yet, but it's really excellent. IT has started a newsletter, which is very informational, and it really is getting information out to staff on what's upcoming, but here are some things that you need to remember with regard to e-assembler. You know, they'll focus on an area that, if it were me, I would be keeping it in a notebook and using it as a resource, because it's very, very informational, and I think this is a great step forward. Work with architectural firms to evaluate the security and access structure of all schools in the district. You know, where our goal is to have a single point of entry. We have set aside $800,000 over the next 2 years to accomplish that. So we are looking at 50% of the schools this year and trying to make that happen. This is, again, making everybody part of it, is to work with the school site payroll secretaries and administrative assistants so they understand the budget a little more deeply, and they can even assist at the school level with the resources that they have and work with their school administrator.
Okay. I just had a question on that. Work with school site payroll secretaries and administrative assistants to determine what resources are available to help achieve the
organization's coordination.
Okay, I'm sorry. I misstated the record pretty well.
Okay, for this particular goal, I would really like to see it be district-wide, not school-specific. I can see on almost every single one of these items how it could improve the culture, how improving the culture for the employees as well as the school site would matter. For instance, the one about technology and use.
Mm-hmm.
If this were district-wide and you looked at transportation, you'd find that they have only an old computer, and most of their computers have been removed, so employees don't have access to computers unless their job requires a computer. Now, that particular group of employees may not have access to the internet at home,
mm-hmm.
or may not have computers at home, so communicating with us, with you,
mm-hmm.
Reading the website would have to be done at their site base.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's just one example that I can think of off the top of my head. Payroll secretaries, that's an important issue for all of our work, just our school sites. So this board
just
is an objection, I'd like to broaden that to district.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And I wanted to follow up here when you were talking about student self-efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that in the last one you had fewer discipline referrals. And when I was looking at this again, I think another area are the instances where we have bullying and we have harassment I know that there's a form that is filled out when these events happen, but I think that given the fact that our district cares so much about making sure that students are safe, mm-hmm. and part of learning, I mean, students can't learn if they don't feel safe, if they're not in school, if they're, you know, being expelled and so on and so forth. And so we don't really do much with that. And unfortunately, when it comes to bullying, it's very, we only go by the definition of bullying, but there are many other instances in the life of students in our schools where they just don't feel safe. Something happens, it may not be the definition of bullying, but it's something that doesn't allow that student to feel safe in school, and then they don't want to be in school, and it creates a lot of other problems. And I just wonder why those types of situations, we don't kind of get a baseline, you know, of our attendance rate, of our referrals, of these instances of harassment or feeling unsafe. So we have a snapshot of, you know, what's happening in our schools. And if we're talking about school climate, you know, one of these evaluations they had provide a process for summarizing formal, informal, and recurring complaints to use and identify improvement opportunities. You know, I think that's one of those areas where a lot of times we welcome people to give us feedback, but because of, you know, there's so much going on, it doesn't really happen, or we don't really use that information to make changes. And I think that's essential to really improving school culture and climate. And it gets at the heart of what happens with people. Technology training is important. You know, our benchmark assessments are important, getting people involved. But when we're talking about school climate and culture, I think a big chunk of that is kids feeling safe in school and what we're doing to make sure that we're listening and we're proactive and we're responding.
We do have baseline data. I think in terms of attendance, all the schools have their individual data. They also have their individual data on, you know, one of the things that we talked about was the idea of reducing suspension rates. Our goal is to get this process and this capacity in place. So there are lots of things going on in the background in terms of activities and, you know, bullying programs. And I think they're trying to get something started at the middle school now with student groups. But in terms of what you want to evaluate me on, with regard to this, right now, trying to build that capacity, I think some of those things will be better served. But attendance rates was something that we felt like we want to get them there. We're trying to do a community-wide initiative on that as well. But if anybody wants to add to that,
we've taken an approach with bullying that's been pretty much homogenized, it's standard across the district, and I feel like the school cultures vary so much, and that the population, the people in the schools are very different, that would be a goal that you would give to your principals, to reduce the amount of bullying or perceived bullying. I know that definition shows that we have low rates of bullying, but I recently saw a project that a student had done about bullying, and they started the project with a student who had hung himself over some harassment. And I thought to myself that if all we have to do is save one life. I mean, there's a life out there to be saved, and these kids are brutalizing other kids, and it's still not fitting the definition of bullying. And you need to give that to your principals as a goal, that they create a culture and do what they have to do to reduce that kind of harassment. I don't know what word to use for it. Amongst their school culture, and it's going to be different. We're not going to be able to take a canned program off the internet or somewhere and plug it in every school and have the impact it needs to have. I mean, the students have to know that this isn't tolerated and that they will have consequences when they do things like that. You know, because it varies from principal to principal. You've got principals that take it very seriously and do whatever they can to with both families when two kids are involved, you have principals that say, grow up, deal with it, this life. You know, so you have such a wide range of approaches. And we've got to take it seriously. So I believe that you need to give that to your principals as a whole. And you evaluate them on how they're handling bullying in their each respective.
And it's just because of everything that you said, it's hard to get data that supports or doesn't support. You know, I think it's through survey, other types of things with students and parents that we're going to get to it. I think it can be both, don't get me wrong. Saying that, but at the end of the day, trying to collect data that supports, that's the difficult thing.
The definition of bullying is collect. And the reality of what children are experiencing.
Yeah.
We have some very distinct differences. And I think your training for your administrators, your site-based administrators, has got to include something besides the rhetoric of word policy states that this is bullying. What your child experienced is not bullying. And under this definition, for a parent to walk out of an administrator's office with the feeling that their concern for their child has been dismissed is not acceptable, in my opinion. Now, do we change what bullying is? No. But do we change the delivery on how these concerns are being addressed by administrators? I don't want to set a goal for you. I want you, as Ms. Disney said, I want you to set a goal for your people that this is a reality. Just because it is not, you're not being able to do those little five hash marks, does not mean that it is not happening in your school. And we especially need to be looking at our middle schools for this.
I would say middle school is where.
And it's not because we have bad administrators. It's because they have a lot on their plate every single day. But this, when we talk about student focus, this is as important as any other information we get on children.
And I'll just say, this is not about administrators. It's about the entire school. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely.
And that's what this, hopefully, this capacity building is going
to
say.
But you need to understand what I hear, and what I'm sure Ms. Jimenez hears, and what everybody hears, is because a parent calls and says, my child is being homeschooled for 2013-14, because this was all last year.
Right.
Nope, nothing was changed. My student and my daughter and the other student were no classes were changed by the administrator's comments that this is not considered bullying, and we are homeschooling this 2013-14.
Yeah. And I agree. I think it's complicated, but I think if you set up a culture where the expectation is that in each of our schools, which has their own subculture, this is not accepted. And when these situations happen, we're documenting, we're keeping track, because if you document and you keep track, it also gives insight in terms of this fits the definition of bullying, this doesn't. So what are these behaviors and what's happening and what can we do to counteract it? And to me, it's a culture. You set the tone. And if you create that expectation that we need to be proactive, that we need to go beyond the definition, and you hold your principals accountable, we're slowly going to see the change in culture. And even those individuals that believe that, you know, that part of life, just be tough and deal with it, are going to think twice, because they're going to say, wow, this is a district where that is not acceptable. We're not going to stop it 100%, but that's the expectation, that we listen to these concerns and we respond in a way that assures parents that we want to make sure their children are safe.
It is not just middle school. I know that's the preponderance of things, but, you know, when we have an elementary young man who is very sensitive and the principal tells the parents and him, man up, that phrase was actually used with the student last year. That's tough. These little, they're not quite still. They're not little kids, and they're not quite ready to move on. But for a fifth grader to be told that is,
I actually talked to the student advisory group, about it, and they thought middle school was a big focus because of how they view the world in middle school. You tell me something in middle school, I take it a whole lot different than when I'm in high school. You know, and that's kind of what they said, you know. What somebody told me in middle school, I was devastated, you know. Now you tell me that, you know, in the sophomore, junior in high school, it's like, you know, kind of rolls off their back. But that middle school years, it's not only the words and the things they do and say, but it's how you're feeling about yourself and the insecurities and so on. So they themselves felt middle school was a big minority.
And that whole involvement of caring what other people think of you,
right.
It doesn't start with
exactly. Life. It's developmental in terms of how they handle it.
Well, over and over you'll hear people say, well, this is just how kids are. This is just how kids are. But I have to tell you, since you did all the secondary principal shifts, anecdotally you hear things, that things are way better in some schools and they're not at others. So that tells me there is a leadership component there, that even though there's a school culture, there's a leadership component that matters.
Sure.
So when we survey, which you said we're going to get to a survey somewhere, you can embed questions in a survey to find out how things have changed under different leadership. And you may be able to identify leaders that just do not tolerate that, or that have a way of leading their people into being, you know, stronger leaders for these kids and standing up for these kids.
You know, I think based on this conversation, I do think that somewhere there should be language in here, because even though it's the superintendent's role to set the standard with the principals, it's our job to make sure that we go back to it and ensure that it's at the forefront. And if it's not embedded at the goal, in the goals the same way attendance rates are, then that's not really, you know, I think it should be somewhere part of the goal for improving school culture. Because if it's not there, it also sends a message. When you know, the community sees that that's part of our goal, you know, we're sending the message that we take this seriously, because we need also from the home support in terms of, you know, how students are being supported. So I would like to see, and I know that's just me, but I think if it's not there, that's
how would you
message.
Like it to the outcome? How would we measure? I mean, I'm open to it.
That's the problem I see.
How do you want to measure?
Is the you know, the way bullying is measured is exactly contrary to what we're talking about. So the artifact would not exist in the standard definition of bullying, but the survey could be part of our evaluative process.
So that could start creating a baseline.
Sure. So maybe in because the school culture and climate is a focus, and there maybe our survey wants to highlight school culture and climate in several different ways. So,
like customer service,
right,
or safety.
Yeah, I don't see it. I was thinking
because that could be then under outcomes.
Yeah,
Survey, you know, the annual survey will include feedback on school culture and climate to establish that baseline, and then, you know, the next year using that data and using anecdotal evidence and other information, then some goals can be set.
How about if we take that sentence out from underneath reorganization physical plan, because they're going to do a survey and that's okay, but in terms of develop an online survey to determine school culture, customer satisfaction, school culture and climate, customer satisfaction, get into bullying, get into some questions that deal specifically about culture and climate. Okay? So let's move that one to, let's move it to culture and climate.
Okay.
Under, the Indian River idea, I think developing the, I think that is a good place to do it.
So the goal actually becomes more inclusive.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to just do an online survey. I want to be sure that we're getting feedback, you know, because it doesn't always work to do an online survey. So a survey, maybe we ought to just say survey. And it may have to be in a couple different ways and methods.
Or surveys, because you can do, also send things home with kids, but they don't come back necessarily.
And it might be good also to randomly, I don't know if the youth behavior survey has a section on that, you know, to like disaggregate that data, even though I know that it's statewide, or to just randomly just survey, you know, kids and get feedback from them in a way that's non-threatening, you know, through their whole classes or through their life skill classes, just an opportunity for them to...
There's any good surveys out there right now. A pre-post survey, we're trying to do it right now, but even in middle schools, beginning of the year, end of the year. We'll have to look into that.
And I'll check it out. If it's just my feeling, that's fine, but if my fellow board members agree, we do need to get down into the elementary grades, especially with four.
Yeah, we're looking at this.
They learn early.
I think there's a, you know, kind of a critical need, if you will. Okay. And then, a community maintain current outreach initiatives and develop strategies to further engage families and community in the district efforts to improve student learning. You know, one of the things that we're really planning to do is establish a Twitter account where we push information out. It's not a back and forth, but
it's
getting information out, and it's good, you know, for real time and timely.
So you gave your stamp of approval for that, huh?
Outgoing.
Yeah.
It's outgoing and retainable.
Thank you.
We're working on that. The other thing is we're really working hard on the website.
What are they working on?
So what to set it up. I mean, you have to... There is background.
You can put it out there. What kind of information?
Because set up a Twitter account takes about 20
seconds.
Yeah,
but who can post?
Yeah,
what?
Who can post? What's going to be posted?
Let me do it.
Like, I was just getting ready to say, like, you can't.
Things were simple.
And I think that's board consensus.
All kinds of fun.
You shouldn't do it.
I do have a comment on this item. I think it's wonderful to use technology, and when I look at the four objectives, this is the only one that really deals with that type of outreach. Mm-hmm. I think we need to have in it something about having face-to-face opportunities to interact, because a lot of what you find in any organization, in any business, it's about relationships. You don't build relationships in front of a computer. You build relationships with presence. You build relationships with listening. And I know sometimes when I've been out in the community and I've met with small groups, I couldn't solve their problems, but I would have people come up to me afterwards and say, thank you for listening. Thank you for being there. And I would say to them, I can't solve this, but I'm willing to listen and take it back and, you know, move forward. So I think that that piece is crucial. And I don't see that here. And then another piece is also media articles, having that visibility. And it doesn't just have to be the superintendent. Sometimes in the past we've had staff that would put out releases or opinion columns on topics, because we also need that kind of presence. When you look at our local paper, whether you like it, you subscribe, you don't, it is the local paper, and there are a lot of these media outlets that put information out there. And again, it goes back to the conversation we've been having for a while about telling our story. And if we don't tell our story, it is told for us. So I think it should be a combination of technology, of face-to-face with a variety of stakeholders, and of media. Media, you know, being aggressive with the media also. And I know that, lately there's been a lot of reporting on education, and it's not all negative, and so we should also be a part of that conversation. So I don't know how anybody else feels about it, but I just think only technology, we need more than just technology.
Well, I think that's a separate issue that says implement new communication tools through technology. So it's a whole separate item. If you want to improve interpersonal relationships, maybe it should be a professional development issue, or in the school climate issue.
In the past, when I got on the board, there was a communication plan. And it was a document that had a plan for communications. So what I'm thinking here, we're talking about collaboration and communication. So if you have a communication plan, your communication plan would be, okay, how do I interact with the community? Technology, this way. Face-to-face, this way. Print and media, this way. A plan. And we've had plans before. That they were implemented is another thing. We sometimes have plans and we file them and we can say we have a plan. And that is, you know, the beginning, but the follow-through is important. So I still would argue that it is a relevant
issue. Is it still a working document, that communication plan, or is that
not? No. It was very, very extensive, if you remember. I remember when it was brought forward, when we had the public information officer. I think the idea that what you're saying is... you interact with people in a variety of ways, and you need, and the superintendent certainly needs to be open to that. I guess what I'm asking is, what areas would you like to evaluate me on in terms of how well I do it? Mm-hmm. You know, should there be face-to-face? Yes, okay, and there is face-to-face, but is there an area that you feel needs to be, you know, a goal that we can measure? So I'm not opposed to it. I think that I personally interact with the community in a variety of ways, but if there's a goal that you feel needs to be set to document that or improve it, why, I'm willing to look at that. I didn't disagree with anything you said. On the other hand, I feel like that is part of the work that you do, you know.
Good this discussion. You know, I think this is one of your growing edges. I think you do a great job interacting with the community, but you interact within your comfort zone. And when it comes to being visible in the community, I feel that it's important to listen to everybody, and they're all different kinds of stakeholders. And we tend to, you know, we have the stakeholders that have authority, and we have the stakeholders that are our clients. And I think with the stakeholders that have authority, there's a comfort level because you're in the same place that they are. I think with the stakeholders that are our clients, there's a lot of uncertainty. And I know that when we interact with these stakeholders, sometimes there's a lot of emotion involved. Sometimes there's misinformation. And I think that it's important to be able to bring them to the table and to listen to what they have to say. And I think that that's the area where, because we can't control it and structure it, we just don't do it. And I think that, you know, with those stakeholders, town halls, things like that, I mean, a tool to measure, and I've read the example before, and in one school district, they just asked their superintendent to, you know, do two town halls, meet with students, meet with your seniors, not just hand-pick students that we know are the cream of the crop, but a diversity of students, because we need to listen from a diversity of stakeholders, not just the ones we feel comfortable with. So I personally think that that's where the growing edge is, meeting with those people that we may not, you know, we may feel threatened by. I don't know how else to say it. And I think that they are part of the people we serve in the community. And I think because I saw those goals in some of these tools, I get the feeling that that is not unrealistic, but it has to be a board corporate concern, not just my individual concern, and I'm just willing to put it out there because I do feel strongly about it. I think that really is a way of helping us tell our story and letting the constituents know that we want to listen. We may not agree with you, but we want to listen and we create a space to listen.
Any other comments on this?
Well, we haven't worked on the tool yet. the superintendent's evaluation tool yet, but I'm thinking there's going to be an area in there for the superintendent's interpersonal skills, and that would be where we would put it, an evaluative piece like we have in the past, without having it have to go into the superintendent's public goals or and how she's going to do it, because that is, for me, you know, a very subjective issue, but something that we have always addressed.
It's extremely subjective, and I do agree with that. I'm not interested in it being in the goals, but, you know, if that's the pleasure of the board, certainly I think the superintendent will embrace that. When I look at in 2 short years how far we've come from being visible in the community with the superintendent previously to where we are today, I think sometimes we get a little Ms. Jimenez has some personal experiences, but I have a lot of people who might have told me that Dr. Adams didn't agree with them when they met with their small group, but that was okay, and I do agree with that. But I'm not aware of anything that she has any people she's not agreed to meet with.
And let me say, you know, I think meeting with small groups is effective. I've never turned down a small group to meet with.
I'm aware.
I don't agree on town hall. I don't. I personally don't. That's my own personal bias. That town hall, you know, I think that problems are solved when you meet with the people who have the issues and, you know, want to do it. But it's a personal thing with me. And the other thing is, and I told you this at the board meeting, is I want you to give me time to be in the schools. You know, that's the most important thing that you should want me to be doing this year, is to be out in the schools and interacting with teachers and looking at instruction and bringing information back. If we keep adding to it, it just takes away from that time that you're able to do that. So I'm hoping that you will honor that for me to be able to. I've set really aside Fridays to. You have to deliberately set aside a time, you know, to be able to do it. But I've enjoyed the time I've had so far because I am getting into classrooms, looking at instruction, having a chance to interact with teachers, and, you know, being on campuses for an hour and a half. That's so good. You know, you're not in the outdoors. You're spending some quality time there. So I think that will help with culture. I believe that's going to help in lots of areas, you know, within the organization. So.
Do you want this to be a goal?
I must have misspoke. I thought there was something in there about it, but I don't see.
Well, there is in the current one.
I was just going to remind the board about the superintendent's employment contract, which has some guidance with regard to the evaluation. And the contract specifically says that you evaluate on the goals that you've been working on. But it also says, and the working relationships among the superintendent, school board, faculty, staff, and community. So separate and apart from this that you're working on today, you have this other ability by contract to include in your evaluation instrument the working relationships among. Mm-hmm. So I think that might help you get to this.
Thank you for clarifying that, because that is a commitment that certainly is very specific. So thank you. Mr. McCain, do you have any comments on this becoming a goal, yay, nay, up, down, around? You're fine with it either way.
I don't necessarily think this would be a goal. Address it in other places if you want to.
I've brought it up because in the past we've had a communication plan, mm-hmm. and having a communication plan. I'm not trying to say what's in the communication plan. I'm giving ideas, but having a communication plan is an important part of community communication and collaboration. And we don't really have a communication plan. So I came across it and thought,
well, the communication plan actually came from having a person on staff who could implement a lot of that.
not implement, facilitate a lot of that. And we don't have that person any longer. And where there have been a couple of things, and I would hope all board members will do this. Recently, I spoke to Dr. Adams on some significant changes in our key people, and letting the public know, you know, that on the move that's in. I did speak to Dr. Adams about the fact that we need to have both Mr. Fritz and Mr. Weinberg in there. Why didn't we have, you know? And but there is no person who does that anymore. So I feel as a board member, I need to speak to her about that and other things regarding, you know, some strategizing that we worked on previously for.
And I would say the other thing is we're a team. If there's something that you think needs to be on there, you know, let me know.
Well, I'm not interested in building my own wall between here and there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spend my energy with that. I'm going to tell Dr. Adams that at the time that, you know, it's a missed opportunity to say that we are raising the bar on two significant positions by the hires we have made, and that the public doesn't know anything about it. There are still people who think we don't have an HR director.
Okay, so with regard to the communication, you know, we can even continue to enhance relationship with communities through a combination of methods, you know, face-to-face, media. If it's not going to be in your tools, you have to add something like that.
I'm fine to leave it like it is.
Okay.
And as we work on the evaluation, evaluation, we'll refer to that language.
And it's important.
Others?
Well, involve the community leaders. It says a minimum of two leaders, literacy leaders in the community, including board members. I'm just curious if anybody else is committed to this first section of your book.
I believe that somebody from the Learning Alliance is going to, Carrie Bartlett is thinking about it. I didn't know whether anybody, you had said you can't, possibly.
Not right now. But it'll be ongoing, right? There'll be
another
opportunity.
The goal is to have somebody that's there every time in that cohort. Mm-hmm. A board member could come and observe any point. The important thing for that is I asked Judy not to send every meeting out to the media, because the goal is not to invite, you know, it's a goal is to work and have a group there. But any time that a board member would want to come and observe, I think Judy would need to know. And we have two cohorts going, so you would only be a part of one, okay? The other one is a repeat, but I don't think there would be a necessity for board members to overlap their times being there, so I'm not too worried about that. But I really didn't know. Mrs. Johnson has a busy schedule, too, going back and forth. I didn't know whether anybody else was interested in doing it.
Let's put Pegler on there.
And I never got it, so I couldn't respond.
I said, and I told Judy I was going to send the schedule out to board members, so she didn't need to send it to the press, and I didn't do it.
Okay.
So I'll do that today, because it's all laid out. Okay. And then
I understand this.
What's that? Which one?
This belongs in
review manually, paper-based permit application in the buildings.
Well, what they, you know, everything is paper-based right now, and they're going to implement it online. And the idea is for the outside to be able to have, it's more transparent, for the outside to be able to see through the website.
And I think this is important.
That's why it's in
the
community. Maybe this is better
that
worded.
We receive from the community members, especially our trades and others. I see that as well.
And the utility report, we were going to put something on the home page where parents and families could look at that as well. So that was the purpose of that. It's just that transparency thing, trying to get more information out.
It sounds like the wording needs to be changed, because the first sentences for each one of those are really facilities issues, but what you're talking about is you're doing these things and you want to provide
access to the community. So it's more, it should be around transparency, you know, increased transparency relative to business transactions or whatever. And then here are the examples. The permit applications are online, so, you know, everybody has access. The report card is online, so those are the outcomes of that transparency, because that makes you think facilities.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's task oriented. Right.
Yeah.
I was confused with that.
And the reason that we pulled it from there is because each group had to put academics, so they felt like this was giving more information out to their community, so that's why it ended up there. But I know what you're saying.
And so then you'll establish a new bullet point about identifying a legislative contact for student learning issues.
Okay.
And Mr. Morrison is the contact for budget issues, so it's that student learning issues person that I need.
Okay.
And then the community needs to know who that
Absolutely.
Is, too. They want to talk to staff rather than elected official. They know who would be that person.
Why wouldn't it be Mr. Reinberg?
Well,
it probably will be. But
it might be, but, you know, legislation is its own animal, so it's not everybody that takes that on.
Not me.
That's right, see?
And my feeling is he would be one of a group of people within the community that are talking about legislative.
I mean, it wouldn't be unusual to have somebody like Alice do it, because she's so involved in Title I issues, which are federal issues.
And all those federal issues.
Nevertheless, they're issues that need advocacy, continuous advocacy. So, you know, it's identifying who that is.
Okay. And larger counties actually have it.
An employee, that's their only job.
Right, a dedicated position. All right, anything else?
I don't think we're going to have time to do the evaluation tool today.
Anything else?
And I just want to remind everybody of my schedule.
Okay,
so
let me adjourn the meeting if I could.
Run, Judy, run. Run, horse, run. Look at her go, folks.
Stop. Meeting adjourned.